Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. He's had lunch with Alice Cooper. He had too many drinks and he's probably going to fall asleep. We welcome Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cool kids have started calling it recently, Rahalastapas. Wow, there's lots of cool kids in. I've given everyone in the audience a pucker pad today, and I've asked them to write down every other comedian they've ever been to see and what jokes they laughed at. I've collected them up. If I do a joke about a subject that you've laughed at before and you don't laugh about now, I'm going to make you rub cream into my back. Nice cream, though, you know, like out of a cow. I have had lunch with Alice Cooper today, not just him, but he was on my table. I was at the Q Awards, presenting an award to Pulp, who are good. They're nice, aren't they? So I met Alice Cooper. Also, the Sugar Babes were there. I had to follow the Sugar Babes. To be honest, I've been following them for quite a while. I think I was the only person in the room who hadn't actually been in the Sugar Babes at some point, both literally, and it's nice, good to see the Sugar Babes back, eh? That's what everyone wants. Do you remember the Sugar Babes? Do you remember the some stuff that happened in the past? And I also, very excitingly, yesterday was my wife's birthday. She's a big Harry Potter fan. We went to Harry Potter World, in not the actual world of Harry Potter. We didn't go fly into a magic realm. It's just outside Watford, which must be a disappointment to any American tourists going there. It's quite good. I don't really like Harry Potter that much, so, you know, a bit of a waste of an evening for me. It was very expensive, but apart from that, it was actually very enjoyable. But at the end, the very exciting thing, they had the handprints of all the 3 young stars of Harry Potter, the ginger one and Harry and Hermione. And my hand is quite a small hand I've got.
as you'll notice if people hear, because that's what you're paying for when you come, you get to see. My hand is exactly the same size as Emma Watson's hand. Exactly. Exactly. It just fit exactly. And it's tiny, isn't it? It's like a tiny... It is. It's not quite a Beatles hand. That's just in the picture. But it's a tiny... It's like the... I used to do a routine about it being like the hand of a seven-year-old girl. And when I was at school, I genuinely was upset about the size of my hands because I thought no woman would ever marry me. Take that, young Richard Herring. I am. It only took 45 years, but I'm married. But now I see it as a blessing. And I used to do a routine where I say, you know, that what I do now with my small-handed power is that I lure paedophiles into a room. It sort of says free child sex this way. Paedophile says and sees that and goes, oh, that's what I'm interested in. Probably take advantage of this. I hope it's not a trap of any kind. And I get in them and I'm behind a curtain and I go, come in, yes, this is where the free child wank hats are. And I reach through the curtain and I wank off the paedophiles. And I used to do a routine about this. And a lot of people... looking... I don't particularly enjoy wanking off paedophiles. I'm doing that for the good of society. You know, if you think about it, while they're being wanked off by me, they're not abusing any kids, are they? So you say you're against paedophilia, but what are you doing about it? Nothing. I'm out there getting my hands dirty. But I've realised I can now... I'm a hand twin of, you know, Emma Watson... So, fellas, if I got behind this curtain, exactly, that is a proper, and that isn't, you know, it's a bit perverted, but it's not that perverted. She's an adult, so that's okay. I think I might offer that as a service. See, weird, isn't it? You're actually more upset about the Emma Watson wanking off than the wanking off. Me wanking off paedophiles. It's your fucking moral system that is out of skew here, London. Okay, well, not going to cut it out of the podcast. It's going to stay. That was my fucking... I should have done the Joe Dolce bit instead, shouldn't I? That's where you never know. You never know. I thought, oh, they'll love being wanked off by Hermione from behind a curtain. Some reason they find it, and I noticed many of you laughed at the exact same joke when Jimmy Carr did it in your pucker pad, so how dare you not laugh at my fantastic joke. Anyway, look, I think we'll probably move on. I'll just check there's nothing else in here before we go. I don't want to there might be something important. There is. Oh, I was going to tell you about Jimmy Savile. There's a lot of stuff come out about Jimmy Savile recently. I don't know if you've heard about it. People get very touchy about this subject now for some reason, but they used to love it. There was a rumour I'd always heard about Jimmy Savile that hasn't come out, and that is that he never actually didn't run the marathons. And you might think that's not all that big a deal now. I think that is worse. That I've run a marathon. It's really fucking difficult. He used to run like a bit, and then he would get in a car or an ambulance and be driven a bit further on. And this is seriously true. This was the rumour about him, and this hasn't come out yet, has it? But think of all the people who must have colluded with him there. He was stealing, thinking he's doing it for charity. He was stealing money from you by not running a marathon properly. It's a terrible thing. And I think they should have kept Jimmy Savile running as many marathons as possible. Those people, you know, he would have been too tired, wouldn't he, to get up to any other shenanigans. They should have made him run a couple of marathons a day, not helped him run less than a marathon a day. No, not so much into the paedophile material here. It's a different world. The culture's changed, you know, before all the things that have happened. We used to love paedophiles in the old days and laugh at it. Jimmy Savile's just ruined it for everyone, I tell you. It's fucked it for me. So, I think I've got you to a point where you're very excited. So we're going to introduce our guest. Will you please welcome... You will know him best, of course, as... It's not what he's best known. He's best known as Mitch in Phineas and Ferb. That is why you have plays the voice of Mitch, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about that. Will you please welcome David Mitchell, ladies and gentlemen? Here he is. Come in, sit down. You can hold the microphone or leave it in the thing, whichever way you feel. He's drinking red wine. David Mitchell.
Hello.
There he is. Got a beard and everything. So we'll get it out of the way because everyone wants to talk about this. You know, you must get fed up of talking about it, but we'll get it out of the way first. Tell us all about Mitch in Phineas and Ferb and what that was like
to work on.
Yeah.
It was like when you go to a room with a microphone in it and you're there for about 23 minutes and you read things out and people on sort of like the high tech phone in America say, could you do that again but a bit louder? And I do that because I'm a professional, and then they go, yeah, thanks very much. And I mean, it's made by Disney.
Oh, is it?
And yet it pays quite poorly. So, I don't know. They're not fools.
Do people shout out your catchphrases from that in the street? You thought you were clever disguising your ship, but I've got you now? Do people shout that out?
No.
Do they shout that?
No, no one's... No. Occasionally people refer to it on Twitter.
Do they?
Yeah.
Do people shout out, hey, look, it's Mitch, but sometimes they call him Big Mitch. They do that.
Is that a?
That's one of the lines.
Literally, some of these.
The
some, I was lying. Some of the things they didn't ask me to say it again loudly. So they've only passed very briefly through my eyes, brain, and out of my mouth. So, but it's a good program, I believe.
Is it?
From the bits I've seen. Basically, it's for children. And
I find it a bit childish.
Yeah. Well, has anyone watched it?
Oh my God!
Yeah.
How can you have watched it? This is his Davy from the Henry the Sixth Part Two. This is his equivalent. You're mad. You have to have everything that David Mitchell's ever said. You have to hit.
I don't remember David Mitchell.
You don't remember him in it?
No.
He plays Mitch. It's a clue. There's a clue in there. Did they name the character after you?
Well, rather rudely, instead of actually televising me, they just have a drawing.
So. It's on YouTube if you want to watch it. I watched about 3 minutes of it. Those are two of his first lines. So you've got a book out.
I'm playing like a baddie in it.
You are.
I display range. It's the closest I've ever got to an Oscar.
He still just talks in the same voice as you talk in, though.
Yeah, no, all right. But he says things I wouldn't say if I wasn't in a voice booth in London paid for slightly by Disney. Is it unmanly of me not to hold the microphone?
It's a little
it's like a sort of cigarette holder.
I like to hold it, but, you know, it's up to you.
Because I feel I'm not a stand-up comedian. I've never done stand-up. I therefore feel I'm not really qualified.
Have a stand to help you out.
Shall I?
I'll leave it there for a while. Have you got a hand twin? Do you know what? Have you got the same size hands as anyone would be?
I don't think I've got.
Let's see how big you are. So your hands are probably more of the sort of Daniel Radcliffe size. It's a little bit bigger than mine. Yeah. If Emma Watson's generally got those hands on the end of her... never see pictures of her hands ever, and that's why... Look, my hands are pretty ugly. They're kind of short and quite fat, and it's like a sort of frog hand. It's like a hand a frog would have. A man who's been half turned into a frog.
Without the extra suction.
Yeah. So... And that's what you get with Emma Watson.
Right.
Would you be interested in my service of being wanked off from behind a curtain? Either me pretending to be a child. Yeah. This is... He works for the BBC. Yeah. This is a little test. If I was pretending to be a child, but I wasn't a child.
No, unlike, you know, everyone else at the BBC, I am neither a paedophile, nor do I fancy that person from Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Emma...
Emma Watson.
So, the Hermione.
Hermione. One,
who was obviously a child for much of her career.
But it's also true of all women, though, and men. They were once children. So if the definition of paedophile gets broadened out to having sex with anyone who was once a child, then we're all going to be in a bit of trouble. But I think it's going to get that way. Yeah. I think that'd be the Daily Mail have their way. They'll just put a picture of a baby and go, David Mitchell is marrying this baby.
The former children that BBC executives have been openly fucking. It's also run by former children, which is child labour.
Yeah. It's a terrible, terrible thing.
Yeah.
Do you ever get mistaken for David Mitchell from the Cloud Atlas fame? Because also you've written a book now, so that you've moved into his territory.
Yeah, well, the book I've written has got a photograph of me on the front,
right?
In order to make it clear that it's not written by the more highly respected author.
But does anyone know what he looks like? Because they might just think that the other David Mitchell was you all along. Don't well, you think? Didn't he? Who came first? Who was first famous? Was it you or him? Because one of you is basically... there's a guy, there's another Jeffrey Archer, isn't there? There's Jeffrey Archer, the awful conservative man who puts money
behind.
Yeah,
the lying lord.
Yeah. And there's another Jeffrey Archer, who spells it with a G, who also writes books. But I imagine... someone just went, oh, you're called Jeffrey Archer, why don't you write some books? And then we might sell some. But who came first out of you and David Mitchell?
He came first, as in he existed first. Right. He's a bit older than me.
Right.
So he was a David Mitchell. He's a pre-existing David Mitchell, right. Which I, you know, just makes me more irritated, really. I don't know when his first book was. Maybe someone who's mistakenly come hoping for a literary tour from that David Mitchell can say when his first novel was published.
It might explain why they were so upset by all my paedophile jokes.
I reckon that I had written a sketch that was on Radio 4 before his first novel came out, which means, you know, if there was a rule about writers, then he'd have to have changed his name.
Do you ever get mistaken for David Mitchell, the director of Arthur Negus in Joyce?
No.
I'd quite like to know what Arthur Negus in Joyce. Yeah, do you remember Arthur Negus? Yeah, it's no good if you remember him. Yeah. That's not observational. Do you ever get mistaken for David Mitchell, writer of Flashbacks with Barry Humphries? Or is that you?
No, that isn't. I didn't write Flashbacks with Barry Humphries.
That kind of quite a sinister...
people who flash their backs.
It could be. Or just people kind of going, oh my God, I just remember what Barry Humphries did to me in the BBC, in his dressing room in the BBC. Are you ever mistaken?
Yeah.
This could take some time. There are 43 David Mitchells on the imdb.com page. Yeah. Did you know that? You're number six. That's why I can't believe you're the sixth one.
Yeah.
There's three Rich Tarrings. I think I'm number one.
I would like
to think
that...
And I think they judge it by who's best.
I wouldn't... I think I'm more well-known than the other five.
Why are you number six?
I wouldn't claim to be... you know, better than them. Mm-hmm. One, there's a David Mitchell who is in a soap opera in Ireland.
Yeah.
Called...
he's called David Mitchell.
No. I'm trying to remember... trying to remember the name of the soap opera.
Oh, I see.
And I don't know why, because it wouldn't be entertaining or anything.
I don't think I've got that one. But there's 43...
Dame Nellie Melba's father was called David Mitchell.
It's quite a popular name. There's 43 David Mitchells on imdb.com. Yeah. Then there's another 12 David Mitchells who have David Mitchell in their name, some of whom are David Mitchell,
David Mitchell, who's, I think, a bit of... I never actually looked to see exactly what he'd done, but it didn't go down well. I think it was a bit murdery.
There's only one character in a TV programme or film called David Mitchell who is... Dr. David Mitchell from the Zoo Family, who was played by Peter Curtin. But that's incredible. There's 43 David Mitchells working in the world of television and film.
That's what I've had to fight through.
But then no one says that's a good name for a character.
No.
It's like a real name, but no one wants to put it as their character.
Yeah, even I thought it was interesting. So obviously plausible.
Are you related to David Mitchell? Do we ever mistake for David Mitchell, the production designer of My Dinner with Andre?
No relation.
Has anyone ever rocked
My Dinner with Andre?
In the other film, My Dinner with Andre, it's a very famous sort of artsy film, isn't it? Which there's not a dolphin in it, no way. It's too human. It's not a dolphin having a dinner with Andre. That would be insane. It's two men having dinner with each other, one of whom is in The Princess Bride.
In the film?
Yeah.
He's in the... Do they talk about that?
I don't know. I bought it for my wife for a birthday.
Right.
This is a true story. It happened this weekend. It was my wife's birthday on Sunday. I hadn't bought her a present, and I was doing a gig at the Purcell Room in the South Bank on Saturday night, the day before her. So I went to the BFI shop, which is the only shop that was open, and bought her My Dinner with Andre and a book of Woody Allen cartoons. And then I pretended I'd bought her a present. I mean, I had bought her a present, but I'd just done it from the BFI shop. She'll never know. Yeah. She's just sitting there for
that. All right. Otherwise it would have been a secret.
Why have you got some beer? Why have they all got beer for, and it was a Some Like It Hot card. I got birthday card. True story. Didn't have to be funny. It's true. The book's out. Let's talk about the book, because it sounds a fascinating way of doing an autobiography, and it's got a lovely ending to it.
It's a sort of an autobiography, but I do it like a walk.
Yes,
because I've got a bad back, and every day I do a walk for about an hour. And I walked here tonight.
Did you?
Yeah,
I thought you were perspiring a little as you.
Yeah, that would have been from the walking. The walking. Wow. And yeah, that's. It's not funny, but it's true.
No,
it's one of those anecdotes. And so I thought if I did it as a walk, I could miss out the boring parts of my life.
Yeah.
I could put things in about what sort of annoys me in the world, because that's the way I desperately try and amuse is by finding things that irritate me. I also thought that way there's a good pun in the title, which actually I didn't think of myself. It was thought of by the producer, Dan Patterson.
Right.
Who I feel very guilty to have taken. To be fair, he didn't have a back pain based memoir in the pipeline. He did suggest it to me. So
backstory is what it's called.
Backstory. Yeah.
I thought I had a different idea of what it would be about. I thought it would be about all the anal sex that David Mitchell had, and then telling his autobiography.
I'm giving up on the cigarette holder mic stand. I immediately feel more relaxed.
Yeah.
But so you thought it was about anal sex?
I did. That's what I.
Wouldn't I have called it bum story?
You couldn't have done that. Would have been too.
You think it's like a rather elegant allusion to sodomy? The kind of backstory. A story of the times that the back part of me, particularly the orifice thereon, has been, you know, for my own pleasure, violated.
Yeah. Well, interesting. I thought it'd be about the times you'd violated other people's anuses, but it's interesting that you have chosen
the back side.
That you've chosen the other one. I think that's where my brilliant interviewing technique pays dividends. You put them off guard, and suddenly we reveal that David Mitchell has been sodomized many times. Enough times to write a book about it.
It's actually a book in which he then perversely mentions none of these occasions, despite the clear cry for help in the title. Now, actually, it would make more sense, wouldn't it, if I was doing the sodomising, wouldn't it? Because I would be then sort of looking at backs a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I spend a lot of time.
Also, if you're doing that, you can put your pad on the back of it and be writing. You could be writing.
It could just be
an autobiography written.
This is the story I wrote while I glumly fucked. Strange man after strange man.
It doesn't have to be men. It can be women. It's interesting that you're allowed to have anal sex with women.
It's a very good point.
But only if they say yes.
Yeah.
Only if they say please go ahead. That is something I might enjoy. So it's not that.
No.
So I don't need to buy it now. But it's all about, and it's very sweet because you've fallen in love, and it's quite soppy. It's quite like properly lovey-dovey.
At the end, I mentioned that I'm getting married.
Yeah.
I'm all in love, which is very nice. It means the book has a sort of happy ending rather than. You probably, if I say happy ending, you probably think that means a wank off after a massage.
Hopefully you will ejaculate at some point with your wife.
I chose not to describe that in the book. Perhaps I missed a trick.
Well, you did.
As I saw the cum come out of my cock, I knew all is finally well with the world. That's
the end.
No, I didn't. I've expressed it a lot more prudishly than that, and I'm very ashamed.
Well, I've written a book.
I'm planning a big rewrite, and it's going to be a lot jizzier.
We've both written quite a similar book, except mine it pretty much is the dozen. Well, I've written a book about the year I turned 40 and the year I met my wife, and then which is I do a more disgusting things I would imagine than you have done. But then I meet my wife and it's very happy and lovely. But Victoria Corran. Now I want to talk about Victoria because I play poker and she's very good at poker. She's won millions of pounds at poker.
She has, yeah.
Have you worked out a tell on her? You could give me a trivia. I could have sent you. What I would really love to have done is sent you in as a kind of spy. And to court her and marry her, and then all you've done is to work out when she's lying, you can just tell what... A tell is in poker when you can tell someone's lying because they've got a little twitch or they
get excited. It's a tell because you can tell.
Yes.
Or is it a tell because they're telling?
They can go, I've got a brilliant hand. That's a tell.
That's it, right.
I've got four kings. That's known as a tell.
Right. I've only played the sort of poker where you're only allowed two cards. So
right.
If you said you had four kings then, that would be either a sign of drunkenness or of cheating.
There's some in the middle though, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
They count.
Yeah.
But that's why you probably haven't been doing very well. Yeah. If you're working off your two, I've got a two and a seven again, is that any good? No, David. She won most of this £1 million off you.
I don't know if she's got a tell. I imagine she hasn't, really.
No, I think she's pretty good.
I imagine that would be one of the, you know...
You've done very well for yourself. She's very attractive, intelligent.
I've done better than I deserve, I think.
In fact, I noticed this in the Daily Mail. I was reading a piece in the Daily Mail. I don't know if you want to particularly hear this. I don't know if I wrote it down. But in the Daily Mail, there's a very moving... Actually, for the Daily Mail, quite a nice piece about... Have you seen this piece about you, about the book? And it's kind of quite sweet, and it's saying how you're in love with your wife. There's a picture of Victoria there. She looks lovely. And then you look at the comments from the Daily Mail readers.
Oh, smashing.
Jamie in London says, nice tits. That's Jamie. Nice tits. Well, yeah. I presume she's talking about... He's talking about Victoria, but I don't think it might not be... That's kind of nice to think that a man would read all of that and then think, I think this article just needs just something. It's very sweet. It's lovely how they fell in love. Nice tits.
What is missing here is clearly...
What the journalist has just forgotten to say.
It's down to me.
It's there. Yeah. Everyone, why has he not written it in the article? It's quite a sweet love story because you sort of fell in love with her a few years ago and it didn't quite happen.
No, we did. Yeah, we met about 5 years ago now,
right.
And we didn't start going out properly. We went on a couple of dates, and then she went out with someone else for about 3 years, and that was a bad patch in my life.
Yeah.
But then after that, we started going out again.
And it was sweet. It works if I found with ladies, if they go out with someone else who's a real idiot, then you can come along and look quite good by comparison, even if you are also. That's how it's worked for me.
Yeah.
I'm useless, but you know, I'm just better than the last person my wife went out with. So her role. She doesn't know. If she meets someone really nice, I'm in trouble.
You would advocate, as it were, sending someone in. Sending some initially devastating but subsequently almost immediately twattish person ahead of you to sort of wreak havoc with the emotional state of the object of your desire.
Then you can come in and...
Yeah.
Seem relatively nice.
Well, next time I choose a life partner... That's what I'll do.
Good to know. Yeah. But because you had this, I think you talked about this in the book, but you had this reputation partly based on the characters you play of being a bit of a kind of solitary loser kind of character.
Yeah, I certainly do.
And do you think that is, I think you were sort of talking about how it isn't necessary that people come to identify you with that character.
Well, people definitely identify me with the character I play in Peep Show, basically.
Yeah.
Although the time I've been making Peep Show, he's had a lot more sex than me. although it's never made him happy. I'm on lots of panel shows, and my persona is the sort of, and it's not like it's a lie, but it's a kind of caricature of me as a sort of buttoned up, slightly OCD, slightly weird, you know, slightly, slightly posh loner, I suppose. And the thing is, when you do shows like that, you know, you need somewhere. It's not like I designed this, but you fall back on your own comic staples, you know, and
mine is the wanking off through the curtain.
Yeah,
people think I actually do that, wanked anyone off through a curtain ever. Yeah. I'm prepared to give it a go. For the right amount of money.
For you, it would be a combination of innocence and sexual deviancy.
Yes,
that would be mine was this sort of cross man who's a bit odd and is probably rightly alone. And, you know, and I'm very grateful to have, you know, things you, I can sort of say in an awkward corner on a panel show that will get a laugh by alluding to a lonely moment of masturbation over a ready meal. But at the same time, it's depressing. When
is
you
the
sort
ready
of,
meal just getting in the way of the masturbation?
No, I'm,
or is the ready,
I'm,
is the
I'm
ready
aroused
meal?
By the ready meal in this scenario. There's, you know, something about the red cabbage.
I think we found the new ending.
Yeah. To the book. But yeah, so but then it's slightly, there are points when you sort of get slightly depressed and you sort of think, do people think that that is literally all I am? And this wasn't a joke, it was a sort of part of a long scream for help. And which know, is scream for help broken up by various other rounds in panel shows.
But it's quite odd because, well, you know, I was in the first half before there isn't on tape, I was talking about the fact that I never really get invited to any of these things that celebrities get invited to usually, and I've been invited to a couple of them recently, and it's kind of odd, but I've kind of, you seem to be someone who's kind of stepped outside of that world as well. You're not, you don't take drugs as far as I am aware.
No, in fact, one of the things I say in the book, and by the way, it's too late for anyone to put this right now, is no one has ever, ever offered me any cocaine.
Right.
And I was already, I didn't want to take cocaine, and I was already with my answer, which was no thanks, and my follow-up explanation if they got a bit pushy, you know. Like, no, I sort of think, you know, maybe it would be great, but you know, if I like it, then that's bad, because it's bad for you, and if I don't like it, then I've taken something I don't like, you know. It's absolutely flawless, if utterly mundane reasoning. And I was all braced for it, and I've never had to deploy that.
Yes. No,
and it's very difficult to take that as a compliment to, no one's ever thought, you know, a lot of people, I wouldn't want to come across like a cokehead, but I wouldn't want to come across as someone who just wouldn't consider it. It's like if everyone always assumed you were a vegetarian. And there's nothing wrong with being a vegetarian, but if people just went, oh, there's no point in even offering them any meat. There's just clearly, they're definitely not up for any meat at all. They're just, you know, they look like they only eat lentils, and I'm so sure I won't even check. That's what I am with drugs. Yeah. In an environment where drugs, you know, there are a lot of people who think they're great. So they think I don't like the thing they think is great, so they think I'm a twat. That's what I'm... That's what I've got out of that.
I'm the same. No, I am the same. Really, I have had some drugs, but very late on in my, you know, I was in
meal.
I was in my 30s, so it was right. After, you know, it was sort of. But I never got offered. I never really got invited to anything, and I spent most of my 20s sitting at home playing Civilization 2 on my computer all weekend. If only you'd been around, young lady, screaming with delight at the idea of a man sitting in his dressing gown, secretly eating bacon that he was pretending he wasn't eating, and playing Civilization. You could have come and watched. But I feel, you know, reading through all your stuff, I find it quite interesting. I think we're quite similar in lots of ways. Not similar in every way, I have to say, but I think we've got a lot of similarities. I'm born on the 12th of July, you're born on the 14th of July. We're both Cancer.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean anything. you did study modern history. I sort of look at your career. A lot of these people I interview on this show are wildly more successful than I am. And I look at your career. And I can remember when I started off that what you do is exactly what I would have wanted to do as a comedy career, exactly. And now
threatened now.
We're almost the same person. I was disappointed when our hands didn't turn out to be the same size, or that the kind of universe when we touched that the universe just didn't go and sort of suck into us. I was disappointed that didn't happen, because I'd become convinced that you were kind of like me,
that we split
in a different,
some sort of like a sort of different way of doing sliding doors, where the doors actually went straight through Gwyneth Paltrow. And then, implausibly, she didn't die, but one half of her walked off to be one sort of comedian, and the other half of her...
Yeah.
Well, it might explain why I've only got one arm, one leg and half a penis.
But it's, you know, it's kind of, I think in a lot of ways, certainly for anyone, I think, you know, as I was saying in the first episode, you're not interested in music. I imagine, like me, you listened I listened to lots of records, but probably you watched some videos of comedy a lot.
Yeah, I watched Monty Python videos and Blackadder videos.
And learned them all off by heart and weren't interested in listening to music and thought it was a bit stupid that people were judged by what music they liked because you could just pretend and ephemeral shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, you kind of agree with all that. I think I'm just saying you've kind of that's an amazing career trajectory that you've kind of gone straight into doing all of these things that I think are sort of like a comedy nerd's dream of being a comedian.
Well, I feel like that I've got the job I dreamt of doing when I was I was a teenager. Definitely.
Yeah. Didn't it happen for me, Dave? Which thing went wrong? What went wrong? I mean, I started off well, and I was on TV with Stuart Lee. Yeah. Don't know what happened to him. Yeah. And then it's all. Now I'm sitting here, and I'm quite sweaty, and I haven't even walked from my house. I'm just sitting here on my own. I'm thinking, you look fine. Walking around is quite good. I'm thinking, look how sweaty I am.
You don't look sweaty. You know, you're just glowing.
It's because I'm wearing. A suit.
Yeah, I think. But you're living the dream.
I am living the dream.
You're internet publishing your every syllable.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing 12 different podcasts a week.
Yeah, you're right.
Get to play yourself at snooker.
Yeah, you're
right. That's not even a euphemism for televising your own wanking, which I'm sure you'd find an audience for. It's out there.
I think you're right. It is better doing all this stuff for no money rather than all that adverts and sitcoms and panel shows, lucrative panel shows. Yeah. No, you've made me feel a lot better about myself.
I mean, I wouldn't swap.
Of
all the careers on earth, yours would definitely be in the top half that I'd pick. Well above. I mean, I don't want to make iPhones in China. That sounds like tough work, and I don't want to work in PR. But
no, I would swap, David. If you want to swap, I'm prepared to swap. Is what I'm saying. Everything. I'll get my wife to stand up. You can have a look at her. I'm prepared to swap the lot.
I was gonna.
Why don't we just do it for it? Like, it'd be like the Prince and the Pauper.
Yeah.
Because we look identical. No one would know. We'll swap for a day, but then, like in the Prince and the Pauper, without you knowing, I'm going to secretly stay in your life and not tell them that blown this plan already.
Are you accusing me of doing that to you about 10 years ago?
I am feeling that because it's weird, isn't it? You know when you were in that stationery cupboard with Izzy Sooty as Dobby, and she was rubbing her bum against you? Did you did you get an actual hard on?
A real erection?
Yes.
No, I didn't. No, but I did worry that would be embarrassing if I did.
I think it's one of the most.
If I had got one, it wouldn't have been a proper one. It would have been just my penis doing that to spite my brain. Sort of embarrass one. Like, I mustn't laugh. Oh, I'm laughing. I mustn't get an erection. Oh, I've got, which is not. It's got to be the least complimentary sort of arousal. It's not arousal. It's embarrassment turned sexual. What would happen if you Googled that?
Everyone in this room has done that with my audience. It's a very sexy scene, though.
I don't know. Do I say thank you? I must say that was a really embarrassing scene to shoot. Because obviously everything in Peep Show is shot, you know, POV, so there was no chance of seeing whether or not I, you know, was enough of a method actor to be aroused below the waist. But but the idea of having to do the sort of face that I think I do if that were happening, and I don't want to betray anything about myself. At that moment, you just want people to go, "Yeah, that's a perfectly normal face to do when ejaculating in a stationary cupboard." Don't want people to go, "Why did you do that? Is that how you are then?" Because it's initially embarrassing because there's a crew of 40 people sort of watching on a monitor, and then you sort of think, but it's not going to get better. This is going on Channel 4, so, you know, up to 10 times as many people might see this.
That's very, Someone will have masturbated watching that scene in this room.
Sorry, someone in this room someone will actually have done that in this room.
Well, probably both.
Someone but in also, this room. Probably with the internet and all the, you know, people wanking, it will probably have put someone off their stride as well. Someone who is very happy will accidentally have clicked the wrong direction when they were having a lovely time and then, I've been put off my wank by this horrible sitcom. By that ugly man doing that weird face.
I'm going to ask a quick emergency question. I thought our audience would be more interested in Dobby in the stationary cupboard. I have talked to Izzy Sooty about it on a separate. Wasn't it a very early scene? Was it one of the first scenes you filmed with her?
It was, yeah. What did she say? Did she say I was brutal or masterful?
She said she was very aroused. She was disappointed you didn't ask her to marry her there and then.
No.
Could be married to Izzy Sooty. No, I can't remember. Anyone remember what Izzy Sooty said about? I think she was similarly embarrassed and thought it was not an appropriate question to be asked. It was asked in an interview. You've got proper people interviewing you. I've gave you a pucker pad before the show and you've written down all the interviews you've had with other people. I saw you on ITV playing Aerosmith at table tennis.
I did do that on ITV.
Did anyone see that?
No.
No. Oh, you missed a treat. It's not. I don't think it's a series. Partly because you were much better at them at table tennis than they were. I felt you were playing. I don't think you were playing your best, though. I feel you were helping. You were getting it back, so they could. You felt you didn't want
to.
Show
I wanted
off.
A decent rally, and I didn't want to look like. It wouldn't be nice to. To you know, smash the ball hard in the face of an aging rock star. And what if I consequently lost? I lost in a horrible, violent, vindictive moment against I wouldn't say they're not national treasures, are they? But you know, sort of
it's
great
surreal.
American artifacts of rock.
It's a surreal moment to find yourself in.
Yeah. I remember thinking this would be perfect for Would I Lie to You, as a truth, or is that true that if it hadn't been on ITV?
Don't
be fine
anyone
if it was
seen
on
it,
Channel 4,
honest.
Yeah.
No one knows what we're talking about. I think, there could be other, you could be playing sort of snooker against the surviving members of Nirvana, you could darts.
I'm not going to know enough band names to join in with this riff.
Okay. Okay, you can think of the pastimes. Darts against darts was a fucking good one. You can fuck off. Yeah. You can fuck off the audience not laughing at my brilliant joke. Because I didn't even plan that. That just came out. I said darts. I'll take you through the comedic process. I said darts. I thought who would be a good band to play darts against. And I thought, there is a band called Darts. Forgetting that none of you were alive in the 1970s. They were really good. They had a funny one in there. There was one bloke who was a bit funny. Was Don Hegarty in darts or was that something else? Someone... Don Hegarty was very good. Dan or Den, which is it?
Dan.
Well, my one man saying
you have to
agree. Is laying me down. Dan, I think it's Darren Hegarty. There's a lot of Hegartys out there. They're like David Mitchell. He was very funny. He had kind of crazy eyes, and he was on Tiswas as well. We were talking about Tiswas earlier.
Yeah,
that's just us backstage. Isn't it? It's the kind of thing we talk about backstage.
Bar billiards.
Bagatelle.
Bagatelle. Nine Men's Morris. You've got to come up with the band names.
I'm keeping up my end.
You're Jenga, is that a sport?
Yeah.
Jenga against the Wurzels.
That's not as good as darts with darts. That's just a non sequitur. Yeah. If you had to have sex with an animal, if you had to, you had to do it. I'm not saying you want to. Which animal would you choose? You can choose any animal. It's like they're saying
it really is.
We're going to wipe out the population of the UK unless you, David Mitchell, have sex with an animal. But we're not. We're not monsters.
That's not the same as I had to. Is it?
Okay, that's something very important.
You say if the alternative were the wiping out of the population of the UK, would you have sex with an animal? And if so, which one? I might go no. Fuck the population of the UK. I don't want to fuck an animal.
Includes all your family, your wife.
Yeah, I'm aware of the moral dilemma. I'm just saying. It's not the same as I have to. It's as I have a difficult choice to make. I think, actually, now you said I would probably consent to do my best to have sex with an animal, but I definitely think about it.
Okay. Let's assume you've agreed.
Okay.
To do it.
So it's like I had to.
Well, you had the choice. You can choose not to have sex with the animal, but something unpleasant will happen. unspecified that would really.
I think I'd have to get people to specify because unpleasant things happen all the time.
Don't usually get trapped in this part of the the question. Don't usually. And I'm glad we have done because I'm glad to meet someone more pedantic than me. And I think it's very important when you're asking these questions that every single aspect of them is covered. So thank you for that. But you have to have sex with an animal. The people making you have sex with it aren't monsters. They've said, you can choose, David. You can have sex with any animal you want. Right. It can be a specific animal or a breed of animal or a species of animal. Which one would you choose?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. No, that's good. That's fine. No one's thought of that either. I just don't know.
I think an animal that, you know, I think... I just want it to be, as in general, as low stress as possible for everyone involved. The animal, but mainly me. But what constitutes having sex with? I mean, what if I just swatted a fly with my cock? Would that count?
As long as
if I just had to sort of make myself aroused, possibly not by thinking about a fly, or by thinking about a fly, and then use that to sort of assault a fly. But I would not in any meaningful way penetrate the fly, because the fly is so much smaller than the object of penetration.
That wouldn't count.
That wouldn't count. No, all right, because otherwise I'd say a fly. And I would not say a wasp.
You never know, it might be fun.
So it's got to be an animal of sufficient size to be able to enter.
Yeah, at least enter, and it's alive when you enter it. It doesn't necessarily have to survive.
I don't want to.
It could explode. It could. it could just be gently.
I don't know. A sort of medium-sized drugged animal, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe a very. A very calm old Labrador. Actually, now I've said that, I've sounds lovely, doesn't it?
Sounds nice. Bounce, I'm like Bouncer from Neighbours.
Yeah. But in not particularly bouncy moves.
Well, towards the end when it died, just before. Just before it died. It would have to be alive. We're not getting into Jimmy Savile territory here. So, I love the way everyone's going to me. I have not had sex with a corpse. Don't disapprove of me. Should be disapproving of the people who've had sex with corpses. Though if he'd stuck to corpses, it wouldn't... Would it be as bad? This is a dilemma. If we found out Jimmy Savile just had sex with a few dead people.
Yeah.
That's all he'd done. Or that he had sex with some living people that he didn't want that were under. Which is worse, do you think, of those two things?
It's definitely worse to rape the living than to violate the dead. That's definitely worse. A dead body is just an object. Well, people are wrong. If they're it's quite simple. A dead body, it's not nice. I don't think that should be allowed. But it's not actually doing anyone living any harm. So
he's done well with his... I'm slipping a few questions in. The BBC have just asked me to ask him. He's got them both right so far. He can carry on working. Channel 4. The book's good. It's a good book. I'll tell you what you should have done.
Go on.
There should be a Shrek in it. There should be, at some point, I noticed there's no Shrek in it.
You know, you're
and
right.
You could have done a bit. Either you're bumming the Shrek, or you just walking along, and then on one of the walks, the Shrek's, oh, hello! Hello, David! That's how it's...
Yeah,
that's a Scottish Shrek.
Right.
Just an idea. And then it was because people like Shrek. That's what I'm saying. You should put a Shrek.
People do like Shrek, don't they? Yeah.
So if you put a Shrek in, I think it would just say, and then on the front cover, it's mainly your face, but in the corner is just a little Shrek.
Well, maybe I could do that for the paperback.
Okay.
And so now, and I can imagine the Shrek popping up on the side. Yeah. And now with added Shrek. Or with unadded Shrek.
Yeah, an added Shrek. Yeah.
With added
Shrek. It's not Shrek, it's a Shrek.
A Shrek.
Yeah.
Now with Trek added, that's not enough. That's like Shrek's.
Because
like
a substance. Shrek. People expect the Shrek.
They want.
But you're getting a Shrek.
Right. Like, it's not like Our Father Christmas, as opposed to. You could tell that it's just one of Shrek's helpers.
I was on Westminster Bridge, and I don't know if this happens every day. There was just people walking around in Shrek masks. going up to people having their photo taken and getting into the photo with them. And they look like
Are you sure this really happened?
They were kids. I don't know if I've started noticing Shreks. Certainly, recently people have started emailing me pictures of Shreks in things a lot. You know, when there's a Shrek on a package somewhere, they send me that. Go, ah, and I go, yeah, I'm not going to laugh because I'm, you know, I've invented this idea. But there was like little, like 4 foot tall Shreks on Westminster Bridge this weekend, just going up to people and saying, "Do you want your photo taken with us?" And then having the photo taken with it.
No, that I don't. I think you imagine that.
Has anyone else seen the Shreks of Westminster Bridge?
No. The short.
Don't say no, because you can't speak for everyone. All I want is just the one voice going, "Yes, Rich, I saw them too. They were magical."
Why? Are they presumably they're children?
I don't, because I couldn't see, because they were had a Shrek mask. Well, I presume it was a mask. It might have been an actual Shrek. All right. Let's not spoil the magical illusion.
Well, were their hands green?
No, they just had normal.
Well, obviously, if they're not actual Shreks, then that would be a way of telling. Unless they're actual Shreks wearing human hand gloves, and I would say if you wished to infiltrate London with your army of mini Shreks, do something about the face first. Uncannily brilliant hand makeup is not going to solve the problem alone.
I thought it was a bit weird.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether I thought terrorists might have listened to the show and thought this would be quite, people like, I've told them people like Shreks. You know, people love Shreks. What would be quite a good way of doing a terrorist attack? We dress up for Shreks and then go to Westminster Bridge, and we can get in people's photos and then just sort of stab them and stuff and then run away. Yeah. We take off the Shrek masks. No one knows who did it.
So throw
them in the Thames.
How many weeks of apparently benign Shrekking about on Westminster Bridge do you think the terrorists will indulge themselves in before stab weekend?
I think you just do one dry run. I might have seen the dry run because no one... Well, I didn't see it in the news. I reckon if some Shreks had stabbed some people or got a machine gun and just started gunning people down.
So avoid Westminster Bridge this weekend. The Shreks are about to turn.
Yeah. Could be. But apparently your book does have me in it.
It does have you in it.
What do I do in your book?
You've rather revealed that you haven't read it deployment of the word apparently.
I'm glad that I took a punt. There might have been a fucking Shrek in it, and you could have gone, there are several Shreks in it, actually. Chapter one, did you not see? It starts with me in bed with a Shrek.
You are in it, because it's a story that's embarrassing to me, because I was the first time I met you. And I'm hoping you won't think that the person you met then was me, and you won't have joined me up to that person. It was when it was on in Edinburgh on the Edinburgh Fringe about 1994.
Right.
And Robert Webb and I, Robert Webb basically just asked me if I'd like to do a two-man show with him. We were both students, and we were in the bar at the Pleasance and a bit drunk, and you came over and said well done to him, because he'd been in a show you'd seen, the Footlight Show. And we sort of got chatting, and I got into an argument with you about Eric Morecambe. In which, basically, I think I was drunkenly contending that Eric Morecambe was brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
And I took you to be refuting that. I don't think you were.
I think
you were sort of saying that other comedians are also allowed. And I was saying, oh, this is ridiculous arrogance of this Richard Herring, who thinks he's better than Eric Morecambe by trying to also be a comedian. And I don't know. I remember it going on for quite a long time, and I was drunk. So it could have been a sort of a 48-hour diatribe, for all I know. And I felt... And then it was some weeks before I realised quite... What an asshole I must have seemed. Wow. But I don't know if you have any recollection.
I don't remember much from Edinburgh.
Happy to hear it.
I was drunk myself through the whole of Edinburgh.
Well, you were making a fuck's sight more sense than I was.
It would have been good if there was an occasion in Edinburgh when this would have been brilliant if it turned out to be you. And I think I would have remembered if it was you. At about that time, where a bloke came up to me and said, he was quite drunk, he said, "I've got to apologise to you. I saw you last year and I called you a cunt." And I said, "I don't remember, don't matter." And he said, oh, it's all right then, good. And then he started, I was with some friends from school, and we kind of had a drink, he sort of just started joining our group after having apologised for the previous year, called me a cunt to my face. So now we're friends now. So he started having a drink, and then we were sort of there for, and we talked to him quite like 45 minutes, and he was getting more and more drunk and more unpleasant. And then he sort of started slightly being unpleasant to the girls we were with. So I said, I think you better go now. I think, you know, it's been interesting to meet you, but I think you better go. And he just stared at me for ages, and then he went, I was right about you last year. You are a cunt. And I said, no, I'm not a cunt. I've talked to you for 45 minutes. I've been quite nice. But I think you should go and find your other friends, which I said slightly pointedly, because I knew he didn't have any friends with them. But then he went away, and then he came back, and he said goodbye to everyone. When he got to me, he poured a pint of warm liquid over my head, which I assumed was urine. I'd made it because it was warm,
yeah.
And Arthur Smith had just had some piss thrown on him by someone else.
I assumed what he'd done. A pissy year,
yeah. And he'd been out of the, you know, he'd been out of the conversation for a bit. It's like, you know, if you'd just gone to get some water, that wouldn't take very long. He'd been away long enough that you'd imagine he'd gone to the toilet and weed in a glass and then come back. So I actually just, I kind of had a fight. It was one of my rare fights that I've had in my life. I had a fight with him. That would have been good if that had been you.
Yeah.
And then at the end of this interview, you went, I was right. You are a cunt. You deserve to have, and that was my piss.
And I've got some ready.
But I'm not very glad
to say that wasn't you. That wasn't me.
I had him in a headlock at the end of it, and I'm terrible at fighting. You can read about this in my book. Right. There's my five fights I've had in my book. And I was sort of trying to punch the wall, but I couldn't even hit him. I was
kept hitting your own elbow.
doing that, and I was going, leave me alone. And I said, you poured a pint of piss on my head. He said, it's not piss, it was water. And then, as if that's going to be, I've overreacted.
It is better than it's water.
You know,
I would say if I'd poured a pint of water on someone and they were beating me up and accusing me of pouring piss on them, I would be at pains to clarify that it was water, not piss.
But then, when they said
it's useless for him to say, you know, no, I didn't. You imagined it. It's naturally occurring moisture.
Well,
I slipped.
Having been on the other side of this,
I still think it was a drink I bought you, and I thought you had a mouth in the top of your head.
You seem to be defending this guy enough. No, I think it was you.
He seems very... You probably said something disrespectful about Eric Morecambe. And, you know...
I love Eric Morecambe. I wouldn't have said anything bad about him.
I'm pretty sure you didn't say anything bad about
him. Your book must
be
shit if that's one of the anecdotes in it.
Yeah.
I once met Richard Herring. People going,
I have got the
that?
Same... I can't believe you would say that to someone who's got the same name as a respected novelist. That's...
Not just that, as a respected, as a respected miscellaneous crew in Vox. On Vox, I don't know what that is. That could be the radio station.
A respected late father of an Australian opera singer. Yeah.
Good. And you're quite into science fiction stuff, I'm guessing.
I think I'm quite
just looking at you.
Thank you
comparing
very much.
You to
I'm quite into
match. But you were in Doctor Who.
Do you often imagine you're a robot?
I like science fiction.
Yeah, recently in Doctor Who with Amy Pond, who I like. Yeah, she's over there.
She loves my stuff. She comes to things and screams whenever her name is mentioned.
It's come to that. It happens to us all.
Yes, I was it. Although I didn't get to meet anyone else. It was a bit like being in Phineas and Ferb. To be honest, I went into this room and I read. I was genuinely thinking.
I've seen it.
Yeah,
and I know how TV works. And I was still genuinely thinking you were inside. I was just thinking, that must have been good being on that spaceship with all those dinosaurs inside that robot thing.
The makeup took ages. The slow application of cardboard boxes, the spraying of them silver, being taught how to work all the little lights. I didn't get to go and stand in the TARDIS or anything. So
go to the
I was
Doctor
obsessed with Doctor Who as a child.
Yeah, I bet.
And you know, I used to pretend.
Who was your favourite? I'm just thinking, I'm only basing this on, I think we have a similar upbringing. It's the mid-July birthday, it's true.
Yeah, they're all into Doctor Who, the mid-July.
My favourite memory of Doctor Who as a kid is that Weetabix did the panorama of Doctor Who, and you get little figures of Doctor Who. It was amazing. How many 45-year-old men remember that in the audience? Yeah, two. So what? I'm aiming for what I'm trying to do with this podcast is remember things that no one else remembers. I'm doing quite well today, but most of this audience don't know that I'm trying to do that. So they're looking at me going, why do you keep on referencing things that I couldn't possibly know what they are?
And that's so why I'm like doing. An audience. What is it? Was it called a Google whack? Was that when you got one thing?
Yeah,
What's the version of a Google whack?
Well, I think actually a Google whack would be good. I think as a comedian, my ultimate aim would be to get an audience of like 1,000 people and do a whole show that just makes one person laugh at everything. And everyone else just sitting there going. And even though, it would take quite a thing, because either I think the one person, after about 10 minutes, would start to feel self-conscious. But I'm to that one person, I am so funny that it rises above that. But equally, the 999 are all not laughing.
It's you.
It is.
You're the one person. You're the one that gets your references.
I do.
Yeah, you need to be. You want to be sitting in a thousand. That's a weird dream. 1,000 people, and you're one of them. The lone laugher at your own jokes.
I'm trying to divide into two people. I feel maybe we've done it here, but when I play snooker against myself, and ultimately, someone sent me a picture of someone in a KFC in Portsmouth that looked exactly like me. And I haven't been to Portsmouth for ages, and I don't go to KFC. And I think that might be me too.
Right.
That's actually taken on, because I've created him. It's like that film, and it's like Weird Science, really. And it's like that film that's an arty film out now, where a guy creates a character who comes to life.
Right.
Imagine if I've created another version of myself.
Yeah.
And then he comes and sees me and my dreams come true. I think we're learning a lot more about me than you in this. This is not working out how I intended it at all. I've been in an audio version of Doctor Who.
Oh, right. Well, so was I. It's just so what was the audio of it? Were you in the same room as the Doctor?
I was with Colin Baker, who I later insulted by writing a Metro column that he was the worst Doctor Who.
He was the worst Doctor Who. That's not like the worst thing. I mean, hardly anyone's been Doctor Who. So it's not like it's the worst human. There's got to be a worst Doctor Who.
Yeah, but if everyone had been Doctor Who, it would still be the worst. If everyone had been Doctor Who, it would still be the worst.
See, you're just making the situation.
I am.
I was trying to build bridges between you and Colin Baker.
There's no way. I tried. I actually apologise because it wasn't that bad what I said, and I don't think that. I sometimes say things I don't mean. Yeah.
I think the thing to ask Colin Baker is, who do you think the worst Doctor Who is? And if he will honestly look you in the eye and go, Peter Davison was worse than me, then, fair play to him, he can lie. But...
Who was the Doctor Who in your audio adventure? You did an audio one with.
No, I didn't do an audio. What I'm saying is the act of doing a robot voice in a lonely
studio. Right.
That's
you.
All I'm
fuck
saying.
Fuck you, David Mitchell. I'm going to have to get to with your success, taking my character and turning it into. I knew it would come out.
Taking your character and one of your bollocks and half of your DNA.
Some of the things I say are not true. If you could have, so I've gone to an emergency question because there's a real.
Failed when you go to an emergency question.
No, it's when I failed. I only do it when I failed. I've really failed this. We were going really well, and this uncomfortable. This is nearly the Google whack, but everyone's
about the Colin Baker.
They just don't like because I told you to fuck off. They don't. They didn't like. They thought that was unprofessional. Did Jonathan Ross tell you to fuck off during it? Did he go, oh, fuck off?
He did about 9 times, but they
edited it out.
Yeah.
If you could have a hand made of ham... See, I knew I'd win them back. Or an armpit that dispenses sun cream, but... Because I know you're going to start stipulating stuff. I'm going to get that... Yeah. The ham hand, it would be usable as a hand...
Yeah,
it would still, you could.
It wouldn't make everything sort of vaguely salty and.
Well, it might. It might be a bit seepage,
what I'm going to ask is, if I pick up a piece of paper with my ham hand, will it become translucent?
I think if you're going to pick up a piece of paper, just be on the safe side. Use your non-ham hand.
You know as well as I do that sometimes it's convenient to make use of both hands.
Well. I think you have to look at your hand, judge the heat. If it's a hot day, I think the ham hand would have like little sprinkles of water, you know, like it gets those little, it starts to sweat a little bit, doesn't it, ham in the fridge?
Little salty moisture coming to the surface of the ham. Today is not a day to read my book with ham hand. I have to use a lectern and turn the pages with my non-ham hand.
Or you could have a glove that you waterproof glove.
Can you imagine the stench of hot ham that would come from under that sweaty glove? I wouldn't be able to concentrate on reading because my hand would be so hot.
Well,
I'd be able to put a fried egg on it, like, you know, which is actually delicious on a bit of gammon.
See, it's turning the ham hand.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. I'm not saying there aren't massive upsides to the ham hand. I'm just immediately.
Well, you have to take all this into account. Yeah. But you would, if you ate it, it would grow back, but quite slowly. So you know, you would.
I wouldn't be able to pick anything up for how many hours after lunch?
Well, I think you know, if you ate the whole hand, it wouldn't grow back for, let's say, a month.
A month. So one
wouldn't fully grow back.
One large ham meal, and I'm one-handed for a month.
I think you'd have to shave bits of the ham off every now and again. You could shave it like
and have a little slice.
Yeah. But and then that would grow back.
Ham is incredibly Moorish.
That's one of the curses of the ham hand. It's not an obvious choice. If it was an immediately reproducing ham hand that didn't sweat and you could eat it and it would magically appear again, who wouldn't have that?
Yeah.
That's not a question. There is downside. You think, it's like if the genie came and said, do you want a ham hand? And you went, yes, I want the ham hand. And you should have listened. I'm being kind. I'm not like a genie. I'm not trying to trick you. I'm giving you all of the...
So you've been very honest with me about the ham hand.
So it'd be really cool. You could eat a bit of it, and it would say if you ate a finger, it would grow back in a day.
You could probably bite off your little finger without... I mean, how often do you use your little finger? That's how long would it take for that to come back?
Like a day.
All right, so you could have a little finger's worth of ham snack free every day, and the only downside is making everything greasy and hammy that you ever touch. Yes, please.
Yes. Wait, you haven't heard. Your armpit would dispense sun cream... the factor of your choice. I am decided whether you could check whether you make that decision at the beginning of the when it's inserted. They go, it will always be factor 20.
Or whether you can
halfway through your holiday, you know,
you sort of strain 10. A bit and up the factor. Oh, that's a factor 40 there. You put that. Sorry, it's just a bit.
But again, you wouldn't be able to commercially viably. Set yourself up as a sun cream factory because you would only be able to produce about enough for yourself and maybe your wife and one child, like a bottle's worth.
One child. So were I to have two children, I would have to show favouritism to one child by refusing daddy's pit cream to one of the children. Saying, no, you just have to use the stuff from the shop. It's only my favoured child, my firstborn, will have my actual naturally occurring cream.
I think when you have kids, you'll learn that you'd probably do half of each kid in your sun cream and then supplement the rest with a shop bought.
Buy some.
Okay, but it wouldn't be enough to have, you know, it depends how big your child and your wife become.
Yeah, right.
But...
I'm not in a position to predict the total surface area of any family I should have
it
in future.
It would be hard to do at this stage, but you have to take that into account.
Yeah.
And, you know, this isn't... It's only a hypothetical question, so there's no point going into it.
Fuck for that.
There's no point...
I thought I was in a real hole.
There's no point in spending a lot of time in really going into the minutiae of it.
Okay, well, I've just got one more follow-up question. Which is in the pit cream world? Does it ever stop?
Does it
only come out when I want it to, or is it constantly leaking out?
I think it would work. I imagine it working by when you specifically move your arm like this,
pump
like a
it
duck.
Down.
You would pump. I mean, that might mean occasionally. You're impersonating a duck or something in a sketch.
Yeah.
And then some cream would go. But you maybe would have a sanitary pad in there.
A gentle downward movement of the arm would not result in any Maybe there could be like bodily emission.
There could be a nozzle on it that you could take off. That would probably make it easier.
Okay. Okay, well, I know my answer.
Okay, good.
It's the pit cream all the way.
Cool.
Isn't it?
I mean, it's a popular choice. People have gone for that.
Most people would, I think. You'd have to really like ham.
I think. But if I'm right, I'm sure someone's keeping a note of it. There'll probably be a website set up to this at some point. I believe both of the League of Gentlemen went for the ham hand, but everyone else has gone the sun cream.
I don't think they were thinking it through. No,
I don't think anyone's thought it through as well as you have, and I respect you for that.
Thank you.
Because it shows a level of respect for the question
that
I think some of them, my guests, have not shown.
Probably,
and for the interviewer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I told you to fuck off, David. That was a terrible thing.
So I didn't take it personally.
No,
I didn't take it seriously. No, to be honest. I have not fucked off.
I really meant it for a second, and then it was just... It was my own bitterness coming through. This is a character I played. People say, yeah, I can understand your problem that people do. The minute you say something, people think you mean it.
Yeah.
It's fucking fucked, isn't it? Yeah. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No. Hmm. No, but my brother has seen a ghost, he says. He said
was he
saw
the question?
Okay. No, you're quite right. Listen to me yabbering on. No, you're quite right. No. Because, yeah.
And now my subsidiary question. Has any of your siblings...
that's an excellent question. Actually, my brother's seen a ghost. Yeah, he said he saw a weird glowing thing when he was a student. He woke up in the middle of the night and he thought there was some sort of glowing presence by the sink.
Does your brother have the same attitude to drugs as you do? The tap came on?
Yeah, he said the tap came on of its own accord. I mean, that proves it.
Well, that's it. One ghost has moved Reese Shearsmith's glass across a table, and one ghost has turned a tap on.
Yeah.
They're not really that much of a threat, are they?
I hear they're little green ghosts posing pictures on Westminster Bridge at weekends.
They're not ghosts. And supplementary question.
They are the dead Shreks of the Victorian era, who died in terrible suffering. They were all drowned for no reason at all.
Have you or any of your siblings seen a Bigfoot?
Seen a Bigfoot?
No, a big, like a Yeti. Right. Don't start mocking the question.
Don't try and be funny.
These are the serious questions. We'll get back to the ones we're messing around when we got through the emergency questions. Yes,
I haven't seen a Bigfoot.
It's a bad question because no one...
They don't exist.
No one's seen it. Well, it's just like, it's an unlikely one for anyone in the UK to imagine they've seen.
I think the thing about a ghost is you can see one anywhere.
Yeah.
But this is a non-existent thing that's also location specific.
Do you think it's possible to have a ghost of you even though you're still alive? Like a ghost? Because I'm wondering
do you mean
if
a shadow.
You know the bloke in the Portsmouth KFC?
Yeah.
He looked a bit younger than I am.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that might have been me. Like, maybe I went to that KFC in Portsmouth and I'd forgotten about it in, like, about 1999 and had a frightening experience of something, or an upsetting thing happened.
And then
my spirit is imprinted on there.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
Yeah.
I think that's very likely.
Right, how did the death of Thomas à Becket affect Anglo-Papal relations in the 12th century?
I don't really know.
Well, you've done a history degree. You got a 2-1 in history, like
no,
I did.
I got a 2-2 in history.
Oh, did you?
There you go, that's the difference.
And you got rejected from Oxford University.
I did, yeah.
Bang! Yeah. David Mitchell nil, Richard Herring won. At that stage in our lives. Let's not take the competition any further. Let's take it off the 1994 when I was on the radio and you were just in the Cambridge footlights. 2-0! Let's not go any further than that. I think it didn't help.
What didn't help?
The death of Thomas à Becket didn't help Anglo-Papal relations in the 12th century.
Well, he didn't ask whether it helped.
No,
how
did it affect it? It didn't help.
Yeah.
It made things a bit awkward for a while. between the Pope and whichever king it was. Which one was it?
Henry II.
Yeah, see, I know
a bit. I know the basics.
Yeah,
I know enough for a quiz, just not enough for a 2-1. Which means I couldn't be a lawyer.
So let's get back to some frivolous questions. Yeah. When Peep Show began, we all love Peep Show, let's face it. How much input did you have into the create? Because it seems very rounded around you and Robert.
Was
it created for you, or was it a script that was written? They said, come in and do this. We thought Lee and Herring could do it. They're a bit old now.
They're far too expensive, yeah. And you know, difficult to work with. And they have disrespectful views about Morecambe and Wise. we've heard. It was written for us. Sam and Jesse, who write it, and me and Robert actually written a show together for the BBC that wasn't ever made. But we wrote sort of a couple of scripts of a sitcom. It would have been like an audience sitcom. In a studio with the sound of people laughing, and that was thank you for demonstrating. which was sort of similar to, you know, it was a similar setting to a buttoned up guy and a more louche guy sharing a flat and not getting on, the BBC didn't make that, and that was sort of at about the same time as Channel 4 were initially looking for something where they'd show clips of other TV shows, and you know, or supposedly clips of shows that two blokes were watching, and you'd hear what they said while they were watching these clips, and then we thought, maybe you'd hear what they were thinking the rest of their day, and so actually Peep Show grew out of an idea where it would just be two voices over clips in a slightly Beavis and Butthead sort of way.
And Mystery then, Science Theatre 2000. Shut up. Except one of those was an alien. And, is that right?
Yeah, there's a round.
Who remembers that? Who remembers Mystery Science 3000? And too many people.
I don't, by the way. I suddenly don't understand any of the words. This must be what it feels like to have a stroke.
I think it should have been called POV, which is what it was originally called.
It was originally called POV, and I wasn't as in point of view. It could also have been called point of view, which would have been a problem because of points of view. I wasn't in favour of it being called Peep Show at the time because I thought it sounded sexy. And I didn't want for the programme to sound sexy because I think its unsexiness would immediately disappoint, you know.
Presumably that was the reason they changed the name, because they thought it would sound sexy.
Yes, exactly.
Stupid TV executive. You know,
and I sort of thought, if they want it to be all sexy, why the hell have they picked me? You know, have a sexy show with lots of sexy people having sex. And the people love that, but this is a sitcom, you know. And you want people who are in the mood for comedy and things being a bit shit in a way that amuses. And if you invite them in expecting porn, and then they see blokes in a flat moaning, they'll be disappointed. And similarly, the audience that wants blokes in a flat moaning in a way that's hopefully amusing, they won't turn up because they'll be put off by the sort of sexy, porny sound of it. That was my feeling, and that's why it's been a disaster.
But do they feel that people... Would you know what POV means? You know what POV means, right? Yeah. No, that man doesn't.
From porn.
From porn, yeah, from porn. So it's still quite a porn name.
That just shows you how educational porn can be. People learn about so many other point of view. That means what you're saying is you only know about empathy from porn.
When you're watching POV porn, though, sir, we'll turn over to be about you for a second. Doesn't it put you off that the penis in the pornography doesn't resemble your own penis, or does it? Or do you only choose POV porn where you think that looks enough like my cock for me to be able to realistically pull this off as being something that is sort of happening somehow in reality and on the screen? Not enough people know what POV porn is. Everyone can go as far as POV, but they can't take the leap to understand.
Well, having shot a lot of television in POV, I dread to think how
quite frankly, fiddly it would be to shoot actual porn that way. Just the simple, the challenge of panning down to one's own cock would be...
Don't you
think
it'd be quite good?
These cameras are heavy.
This might be quite good. Don't you think it'd be quite good if there was POV porn with, like, the peep show voiceover of what was going on? The guy's head. But the real one, like, going, oh... It's a bit. I hate being a porn actor. People think it's great. People go, "Oh, it must be great having your cock sucked all day." It isn't great. Or the great thing about a blowjob is it comes along quite rarely. It's an unexpected treat. If you have it all the time, it's like a living hell. That's what I imagine
or
would happen.
It would just be sort of going, "I really want some heroin." When they give me the money, I'm going to buy heroin. I really want some heroin. Yeah. Yeah, that would be a bit bleak, wouldn't it? You know, they cut to POV. I really want some crack. When they give me the money, I'll use it to buy crack. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's something they'll be thinking.
And I am right in thinking that you were in Bruiser with Tim from The Office.
That's right. Yeah.
There was of course, before he was known as Tim from The Office, it must have been confusing when it was going, "Come in, Tim from The Office," and going, "Why are you calling me that? That's just your name." I think maybe from now on, my idea for making things better might be to put Tim from The Office in it.
I think that's happening a lot more than the Shrek.
The Hobbit.
I think in many ways, Tim from The Office is more versatile than Shrek. Shrek tends to pull focus, tends to pull focus in a way that's not always, right contextually. I mean, it's always very entertaining. But that, I don't know if you saw last week's Downton Abbey, but it wasn't when the Shrek died. It wasn't quite as... I don't think it was as moving as it was meant to be. And it's not because it's not beautifully written and well observed. But I think there was something about the Shrek that...
But do you think if that was Tim from The Office dying, sort of looking at the camera every now and again as he was dying, going... don't you think that would equally... People going, "Well, what's that man doing there in modern-day clothes?"
I don't think it would have been as odd as that Shrek in Downton Abbey was. That, you know...
Well,
when the Hugh Bonneville's tearful speech about, you know, "Oh, I can't believe my daughter, the Shrek, is no longer with us," I don't know, there was something that jarred, you know?
Yeah. How was Tim from The Office when you worked with him? Glad you saw him in the street today.
How was he?
How was he to work with?
He was very nice, actually. Yeah. But, you know, we got on very well, but we don't socialise, really.
You're not.
So I think maybe he didn't like me.
Oh,
I don't know. What
he
do you know?
When he said hello to me, today, I thought, yeah, he doesn't. There's something behind his eyes. He's saying hello, but does he mean it? That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. That's always a good sort of thing to go into any encounter with. Sort of go,
is he just saying hello?
What's this phony cunt really thinking?
I think we both just. We'd realised we were walking on the same bit of pavement and there was no way to avoid it. It was like, I genuinely. Like 2 days after the last one of these, and the day after the judgment came out, I walked past Justin Lee Collins on the Tottenham Court Road, and it's kind of...
Are you sure you're not seeing it? He was standing there amid a great crowd of mini Shreks.
It was definitely him, and I saw him and he saw me, and then like I was in a quandary because I didn't want to look at him because he'd just been convicted of a horrible crime. I didn't want to look away from him because the reason he'd committed the horrible crime was that someone wouldn't look at him. So I had to kind of keep facing him, but pretending that I hadn't seen him.
So you looked through him. He just blanked him.
But I didn't say hello to him. But Tim from The Office, I didn't when I saw him today. I thought, well, he hasn't done any crimes that I know of. I'll just say hello. I just went hello back to him.
Yeah.
But I've never met him. It was good, Bruiser. I remember Bruiser being like a really fantastic show. Am I right about that or am I wrong about that?
I
had amazing people in it.
I haven't watched it for ages, actually. Right. And I certainly doing it was great fun to do. And I think we thought, well, there are bits of this that are quite good and there are bits of this we're not so happy with. And it was very exciting to, you know, suddenly, because it sort of came from nowhere. Rob and I had been sort of jobbing writers doing things like writing on the Armstrong and Miller and the Jack Doherty show, and you know, it was just much better than not having any work at all. But
But then suddenly this pilot we'd vaguely been attached to and I'd not been in and had just written stuff for, they said, yeah, it's got a series, and no one who's in it apart from Rob is going to be in it, and you can be in it as well, and we need to find some other people to be in it. And they, that's when they cast Tim from The Office. Sorry. I keep forgetting his real name. I want to call him Martin Freeman, but of course that's terribly disrespectful. And then Olivia Colman and Matthew Holness, yeah. and we sort of thought, oh, brilliant, sort of from nowhere. We've got our big break and now we're going to be successful forever. And then we made Bruiser, and I don't think anyone noticed that it was on.
I definitely watched it. But then I did. I remember really enjoying it. Was there something about a ventriloquist dummy in it? Is that right?
There was a series of sketches with a sort of abusive ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah. And, it's not because Stuart Lee's wanked me off with a ventriloquist dummy that I remember that. I just remember that being...
We didn't have any scene as dark as... Because I've heard of your experience.
Yes, yeah.
Thank God I didn't go to that horrible Oxford University.
That's what happened.
All that. Yeah.
And you made friends with. You're like, it's odd. You're in a double act with someone that you like.
Yeah.
So that must be odd.
He's never ever tried to wank me off in any way at all, using anything. And I don't know.
I thought
that was unusual in interaction. Not even behind a curtain. Not even disguising himself as Harry Potter, or you know.
Bruiser was the al fresco of the early 21st century. That's what I think. One, two people got it.
I'm aware of it, but I'm not confident enough of the reference.
But al fresco was another fantastic show that was all had Stephen Fry and I think Hugh Laurie, Ben Elton, and Emma Thompson. It was up against Brideshead Revisited, and my mum wouldn't let me watch it because she wanted to watch Brideshead Revisited. And that was in the day where you only had one TV and no videos. Can you imagine that, what that was like, kids? Can you imagine? You couldn't even buy it on... There was no videos, you couldn't buy a video.
Yeah, now, of course, you can buy al fresco. You just out wherever you like and get a copy of al fresco and Brideshead Revisited.
And I can give the Brideshead Revisited to my mum and say, you watch that now! I'm going upstairs to watch al fresco! How'd you like that?
I'm going to watch al fresco on my iPad, you bitch!
I'll watch it going... Oh, it wasn't as good as I remembered it being. Well, you know, I think we've tested the patience of this audience a bit, but not enough. So, you've done a lot of things. I thought the Phineas and Ferb thing would take longer. Do you think when you did the Apple Mac advert, in which you were the PC, and Robert Webb played the Mac, don't think that would have been better if it had been Lee and Herring in it? And B, don't you think it was a mistake made by Apple? Because if I had to choose between a computer that you were and the computer that Robert Webb was, based on certainly the Peep Show characters, I would be you.
Well, based on the Peep Show characters, you would think both of these computers are terrible.
If I was forced to choose between one of you, if there was someone holding me and saying, which computer do you want to use, I would have chosen you.
Yeah.
Because
my Peep Show character vaguely got a job and a sort of faulty moral compass.
I think it was genuine. I mean, it's good for you because they paid you and everything, so it doesn't make any difference to you. I think it was badly cast from their point. If they were trying to promote PCs, I think they would have done a bit better advert.
Well, the trouble with it, I would say, structurally as a campaign, is that their product, whether it was me or Rob playing it, is the sort of goody-goody one.
Yeah.
You know, the not funny one. If you're going to, you know, jokes and selling across purposes, you want to say, oh, the Mac's all good and has got features that the PC hasn't got, but the PC's is doing the jokes and saying funny lines, whereas the Mac character is always saying, oh, naughty PC character, like the female characters in Men Behaving Badly, you know, and so essentially you sympathise with the. You sit in a comic scenario, you sympathise with the shit computer. And you say, oh, maybe I'll buy a PC. I don't mind if I have to keep upgrading it and it never works. You know, it's all funny and it keeps falling over. And so, but And they're, but they're always terrified in it. They should have just made a character a hilarious, lovable Mac that's always getting into scrapes. And then people sort of go, we so enjoy those little comic episodes, we're going to buy a Mac, and who cares whether or not it works? But they're also going, no, we've got to present our product in a positive light.
Well, again, even by comparing it to a PC, in a way, you're saying you're starting from a point of view where you're assuming people think PCs are better. Surely, as an advertising person, it would be better to say, let's forget about the competition. Let's just put our thing out there. Let's just have Robert Webb on his own and not David Mitchell to compare
you're right.
it to.
That's, yeah, that would have been
him just going, I'm a Mac.
That would have been a financial blow.
And do you not feel? I mean, I don't do adverts partly because no one asks me to do them. But also, I wouldn't do them from a... I feel
you're like me and cocaine.
Yeah, it is. But I also feel that as a comedian, if you are seen to be paid to say what someone else thinks, and I mean, maybe it's not the same because you're more of an actor anyway. I don't know.
Well, I would be more uncomfortable. I was comfortable with it. Playing a character, you know, sort of saying, you know, I say these funny lines as someone who's explicitly not got my name.
Yes.
I think I would feel weird about doing advertising where it was, you know, hi, I'm David Mitchell, and, you know, whenever my armpit runs out of sun cream, I immediately reach for the, you know, whatever, I can't think of a brand of sun cream. Thank you, Ambre Solaire. In fact, actually, that's the only one.
Advertising chief of Ambre Solaire, and you've just given him a fucking... Yeah, that's a free advert in one of the top 19 podcasts in the United Kingdom. That is worth literally 5 pence to them in revenue.
I'd happily play a character in a funny scene that the aim of which, you know, that's clearly been paid for by an advertiser, but I wouldn't sort of...
I just hate advertisers, I think. No offence to any advertisers in here, but... Yeah, cunt. But funnily, it was Stephen Fry who does do that, and who does basically go, "Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, and I drink Twinings tea." I don't mind with him for some reason, but with some people, I see it and I go, it breaks my heart. Oh shit, this is going out, isn't it? We can edit that out. That'll never get in. You weren't in the Harry Potter films.
No,
why not?
Well, because I thought, this is shit, I don't want to be. No, because they didn't ask me.
You would have been perfect in Harry Potter as some old fucking wizard or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd have been great.
There must be something absolutely brimming with slightly twatty characters that I could play.
How did you not get in it?
I don't know.
I was in the Harry Potter world yesterday and I was thinking a bit about you. Yeah. Just like doing that anyway. It was there. And I thought, why is he not in it? Why is he not in it?
I could be some argumentative... hobbit or dwarf or just, you know, an elf with a bad back in Lord of the Rings. Yeah. What's wrong with
you? They should put you in that stuff.
Yeah, all I've been is a robot in Doctor Who, and I didn't even get to go in the TARDIS. Yeah.
Sorry to bring that up.
I know.
It's a shame thing. So I think we're going to... I might just ask if anyone in the audience... Because I think the audience have had enough. Your book, by the way, the top 10 books of the week are out. I don't know if you've seen the top 10... books, and in third place, the third best-selling book is Miranda Hart's biography. There's a few biographies out this week.
Yeah.
Second best-selling is Rod Stewart. You're up against Rod Stewart. But the best-selling autobiography this week is Cheryl Cole's. So way more than all the others.
Yeah.
But David Walliams isn't in the top 10. I don't know if you are, but
I doubt he will.
He hasn't sold very well. Yeah. So take some comfort from that. That's how I live my life. The Schadenfreude of the failure of everyone else. Cheryl Cole. It's annoying, isn't it?
Well, she's she must be a brilliant writer. We've not seen. I mean, I only know her as a singer and person from that show. But obviously, what this shows is that she must have written just some very elegant prose. And it's just.
You know, I know what I was going to say to you about your book.
She probably shouldn't have ever been a singer or anything.
She shouldn't.
She's such a good writer. She's been a tremendous loss to literature up till now.
So. Do you think your book, backstory will ever be turned into a sort of Harry Potter style theme park on the outskirts of a town sort of north of London. You'll go in and there'll be a massive...
When I've put a Shrek in it, maybe. Yeah.
But also it worked because it's a walk and they could walk, they could go through a walk. I mean, once they've made the film of it, they could go on a walk through the sets and stuff. It's quite good if you could write, if you could just write Harry Potter, like not that, because it's been done, but Barry Potter maybe. Then it would be good.
Obviously, what we should all be doing is some sort of franchise like Harry Potter.
The Shreks of Westminster Bridge.
The evil Shreks of Westminster Bridge and a good wasp wizard who lives in Big Ben and has to try and spots their plan. He's a wasp, but he makes honey.
Okay, that's I was worried the wasp living. Wizard. Hit wasp with his cock, and that's why I thought you were back referencing.
That's the first thing. You can't make a series of children's books and have loads of fucking in them.
They
fetch a lot of money, those early drafts of Harry Potter with all the sex scenes before the editor went, I don't know if this cross-genre thing will work. It's not very good, the Shrek wasp thing. We'll have to think again.
When I was being rude to you about your book earlier, you were for putting me in and saying, and I said it wasn't very good. What I meant to say afterwards is at least I'm in Frankie Boyle's latest book as well, but in that one I'm raped by some men or something and killed for. So thanks for just having an argument with you about Eric Morecambe in yours. I would hate, because I'm not good in comedy history. I'm just going to be a footnote in these other things. And people will be, in 1,000 years' time, people will be trying to piece together who Eric was.
In Frankie Boyle's book,
anyone read this Frankie Boyle's second book? Where's that's gratifying, isn't it? That's a nice.
So anyone read Cheryl Cole's first?
Oh no, they just don't read. These people are just illiterate. He's not a racist.
Have you any? And you don't watch ITV. You haven't read Cheryl. These people are ghosts.
But anyway, thanks for not having me raped and killed in your book. But maybe in the second
is his book like a? Is it?
I don't think it's happened. No. Maybe it's a Nostradamus prediction of the future. Yeah. Where I haven't read it, but I was just there's a review of it that talks. Josie Long has something horrible happen to her, which is a really nasty. I mean, he's basically picking on comedians he thinks are being goody-goody liberals. I think and then I don't really mind because I kind of like Frankie Boyle. He's not a racist. He's a disablist. He's not a racist. Can't sue me. But that'd be a more interesting conversation. We could at least have a conversation about that. He's definitely not a racist. It's fucking stupid. What a stupid thing to say. And then say, have you ever been mistaken for David Mitchell? This is the number one. This is the number one, David Mitchell. He's quite interesting.
Sorry, he's not here.
This is who I thought I'd booked, because I went to IMDb, I thought, well, he's number one.
Get the main one.
He wrote The Revenge of the Boarding School Dropouts.
Right.
He was the producer of Copper Mountain, which is... Who's in that one? It's a Google whack of zero. Oh. Jim Carrey was in it. It's one of Jim Carrey's early films, and he produced it.
Oh, well, he sounds very...
Have you ever mistaken for him?
Successful, no.
Is there ever going to be a Copper Mountain 2? You wouldn't know. You go, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I think we've tested the patient.
Yeah.
Just going to check. There's nothing else. Yeah, I misquoted Jamie from London. Good breasts, he said.
Oh, that's actually rather more...
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah,
and then there's just two or three people who discuss your future wife's breasts for a little while.
Nice tits, good breasts. It's a rather an odd way of putting it. Actually, nice tits is a thing you say.
Yeah.
I don't, because I'm deeply, deeply repressed. But, it's an expression, isn't it?
Good breasts almost feels like...
Good breasts. It's a robot trying to be bawdy, isn't it?
Well, maybe it's just someone assessing them as mammary glands, as... child feeders. It's like a good breast. They will be good if she has a child. They will
be effective.
Suckle.
Effective teats. They're saying. Maybe they're aliens that wish to use us to breed for them. Just sort of get good breasts.
How long have we done, Ben? This seems like we've done a long time.
Nine hours.
Are we going for a world record? tell me you press play and record on this one, because I played myself at snooker at the weekend in my basement, and then knocked the recorder onto the floor and sat right at the end. And so I played myself at snooker and commentated on it in a basement, and then didn't even have the podcast to show for it, which I think is kind of funnier than making people listen to the whole thing. That's quite boring. I put out like me trying to explain what happened, and then the one bit I've got at the end. But it's kind of funny. It's funny, isn't it, to think of me having done that? I was wearing my dressing gown, genuinely, at the time.
It's sort of pointlessly, but quite seriously. Yeah. I think that you should put that in for the Turner Prize.
I was really angry that no one would get to hear. It was a really good frame. It was a really exciting frame. It was unbelievable. I tell you, the comeback was incredible. It was just you got a point where even commentator one had to say, "Well, this is definitely. There's no way that the other player can come back," and they did come back. I don't want to. No spoilers. Yeah, no spoilers. But he can't hear it. It doesn't exist. So you know, what am I going to do? Has anyone got a question for David Mitchell 6? There's a man, gentleman there. Oh, thank you. That's a good question. Have you ever tried? What a good question. I might adopt that one. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock, David Mitchell?
I don't. It depends.
Yeah.
I don't think. I think I checked. It's different. I definitely found out whether I could.
Right.
And I can't. I don't think at the moment of finding out I was actually thinking that that's what I would be doing then. But it was more like it's more like determining the amount of physical just working out what my options were. Yeah. As part of the working out what my options were that we all do with our young bodies, I know I can't.
Yeah.
So how else would I know I can't if I haven't on some level tried?
You did a sort of dry run, literally, of this.
Yes. Yeah.
To see, and then the next week, if it had worked, she would have carried out the atrocity.
You know, I think, you know, I might have given it a go at some point.
Good, that's good to know. And was there one over there? There's a gentleman here, bearded gentleman, called John. Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? Is that good I am? I did that in the front one of John Galantini. Yeah, fucking good, aren't I? Yeah, did your grandma have... She's dead, right? Yeah, and white hair. Underneath, well, she dyed it, but it was white underneath. But did she have blue ornaments on her mantelpiece? Yeah, see? I'm good, aren't I? Yeah. That's, if you'd been here at home, you'd have been amazing. So, yeah, carry on. Are you going to ask about Peep Show, the TV show Peep Show? Yeah? Are you going to ask you can ask David whether he's like his character in real life, because that's really bad. Don't ask that. Yeah, change it to another one. What's the new question you're going to ask?
Can you tell us a little bit about the new series?
Oh, rubbish. I was going to ask
that.
Can
I tell you? I
what's happening in the...
New series of Peep Show?
Can you tell us everything that happens in the new series of Peep Show? Because you filmed it.
I can't remember what I'm supposed to say and what I'm not.
Right.
And in general, I will say that it's... There is a new series that's been made, and it's going to be on in the next... I don't even know when it's going to be on.
Okay.
But it'll be at some point in November. And I don't know. I really think I prefer people to watch the episodes and find out what's in them as, you know, then.
But if you just told us now, we wouldn't have to watch them. We could just...
Yeah. But you don't have to watch them anyway.
I kind of want to know what happens, but...
If watching an episode of Peep Show is a really tedious way of downloading the fictional facts therein, then I'd say, you know, don't worry. It'll be all on Wikipedia afterwards, or just learn about things that really happened. If the process of learning the information isn't enjoyable in itself, it's pointless.
I tell you one thing that happens in it. Dobby might be moving in, because I saw a clip on the Jonathan Ross show.
No, you're right. Dobby might be moving in. Mark wants Dobby to move in, and then wants Jeremy to move out.
And then the Robert Webb one has gone out and he bought some lentils, and he and there's some cat food, and there's some reason why that's a stupid thing to do. Don't need to watch it now. That's it. That's done. One more question. Don't make it rubbish. Make it good. Well, yes, sir. Or madam, if you'd... Yeah, you. That's it. I think you're a man. I can't see. You sit very young.
Yeah. How? What, have you got your birth certificate? No. No. Okay. How? What's your question? I'm not going to have sex with him. Are you? Just checking he was allowed to be in the theatre. There are rules.
Wow. I love it when there's conflict in it.
I have to repeat the question, otherwise the people at home can't hear it. David, what do you think the key to success is so you don't end up like the self-indulgent long-haired bloke next to you?
Does that mean you? I don't think that's... I just like to say, Richard, I don't think that's fair.
No, I don't
know. I don't know what the key to success is. The key to success...
I'd like to know.
I think...
so...
If I knew, I don't think I'd say.
Yeah. How many times have you played yourself at snooker in your basement and put it out? How many people do you think would download that if you did it? Because about 2,000 people... Yeah? In the kingdom of the men who play themselves at snooker in a basement, the one cued man is king. Got nothing else, have you? Can't come back. And even if you do, I'm going to edit out and have you going, "Hey, I'm rubbish. Richard, I'm rubbish. I'm sorry, I dare challenge you. Please forgive me." Nothing else? Okay. I feel like they've really taken me quite seriously today. Mate, I'm going to listen back to this one and see whether I need to, you know, have a long, hard think about my life, the things that I think are amusing. have you had a nice time, David? It's been lovely.
I've had a lovely time.
You know what? Yeah. I have really nice people. Everyone who's come on this is really nice. I think the key to success, young man, you could learn, just be a nice person. And don't be bitter and angry about stuff. And if you are bitter and angry, just sort of kill yourself young. And... But then kind of people will think, wow, he was good. Remember that guy he was in? He was a maverick in... Just don't live to 45. That's the thing. If I died when I was 37, people would say, do you remember him? He was amazing. Mm. But the problem is, I lived. Thank you very much to my guest, David Mitchell. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Richard Herring's Let's Square Bit podcast. With me, Rich Herring, and my guest, David Mitchell. It was produced by Ben Walker. The music is by Pest. Thank you to Orange Mark and everyone at the British Comedy Guide and Ian Tunes and everyone at his Tunes on iTunes. This is a Sky Potato and Fuzz production. Hooray! See you in a couple of weeks with Dave Gorman. Bye. How'd you like them Sky Potatoes? I hope you enjoyed listening to my podcast. It's free. I'm a nice guy. If you feel like giving something back, there's lots of things you can do. Go to gofasterstripe.com and you can buy DVDs and books. You can come and see my tour, Talking Cock. Go to richardherring.com and click on the poster and you'll get all the tour dates for that. Coming up, there is Aldershot and Newbury in November, then it's all in the new year. Producer Ben is working on Pappy's Flatshare Slamdown with the Comedy Award losers, Pappy's Fun Club, oh, there's called Pappy's now, and David O'Doherty and Celia Pacola in the first episode, which is out on Wednesday, the 23rd of, or 4th, of October, and it will be then on the internet forever, so the date is irrelevant. Do come and see the next podcast is Bonfire Night. It's Guy Fawkes will be celebrated along with Dave Gorman, and there are tickets available for that. Then Adam Buxton and Russell Howard in the next two. Do book ahead for all of these. They're selling very well. Thank you. Goodbye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.